It's the Lean Into Artcast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together every couple weeks and walk around a slippery, sometimes dangerous, usually challenging topic. How do we find the courage every 2 weeks to do this? Well, we've got a system. And last time, Rob had such a brilliant metaphor for the system of how we attack these difficult topics. I'm going to go ahead and hand it to him, and I'm going to drop it in his lap and say, Rob, wow us again with your explanation of the system and how it works.
So now I'm all frozen up because all I heard was it's dangerous and it's slippery, and I'm thinking wet floor signs and you know, some cautious hand gesturing, like stay back, folks, right? This is a mess. It's a whole mess of art topics. So I guess what we do is we look to we want to resolve this mess. We want to clean it up, and so everyone can walk through here safely and enjoy themselves with. We start out by we assess the situation. We assess ourselves actually by doing a little bit of a warm up with a curveball. We're like, hey, are we ready to do this? Yep, cool. And then we dive into it. We're like, well, we've got to we got to you know, get our tools and our strategy and, you know, set up. Like, how are we going to tackle this mess? And then we clean it up. We get down to the tactics and the details with the does this new metaphor please you, Jersey? Anyway. So the second part of the show, as we get deeper into it, we think about like actual hands-on tactics, things that are usable nuggets that we can take away. They could be process. It could be, you know, like a stupid helpy tip, trademark Jersey Drozd. or it could be actual like tools and you know, things that are software or hardware that we use to do this visual storytelling thing in its various forms.
And this time we're ending with a quest. Every once in a while, we issue out a quest to the listeners, to the viewers, to the leaners, and then we set a deadline on it, and then when people turn in their quests, we review them and discuss them on the show. So, and that ties into our main topic today. Our main topic actually kind of was inspired largely by this month's quest, which we are overdue in discussing, and that is entirely my fault. Excited to actually talk about them, but yeah, my travel kind of set me back on actually participating in it and reviewing the ones that were sent in. We got some great ones from Ashley and Dee. But before we get into the main topic and then trickle down to the quest, curveballs. Do we have any curveballs? Rob, do you have a curveball?
One thing I'm curious about, like maybe we could do a delayed curveball. It's almost like we name it and then set it down, and then we pick it up and chuck it at one another later on in the show.
Okay.
Because I think I was chewing on the quest, and obviously we've had some natural tensions as far as time and handling the quest and facilitating the quest this you know, recent or like early summer, right? Mm-hmm. What led to that, and what do we think about that? Do we want to try to do something different? Are we chewing on how to deal with quests based on this?
Are you saying that you'd like to evaluate whether or not, like, or go through another evaluation session about like how we handle quests in the future? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So the curveball is just looking at quests and saying like, what. Is this how we expect it to go and how we want it to go? There you go.
The irony is, I don't know if it's an irony or not. It's funny that this month's quest was largely about time management and reflecting on how our workday goes, you know, and then it's like, oh, guess what? We're going to be almost a month late to actually talk about the quest. So much for time management. But something we've talked about before is that for those who are new to the show, actually, we should say what are these quest things? These quest things are art challenges that we throw out, and they were designed to be something that could just be shoehorned into your workday or work week, or what it turned into was work month, because we were trying to do them every week, switched to a biweekly schedule, then we were doing it twice a month, and then we finally decided, you know what, we should only be doing these once a month, because a lot of the people who participate and watch and interact with this show are juggling as many balls as we are, right? And while the quests are designed to be something that we can take on as well, because we wouldn't ask anybody to do anything that we wouldn't do ourselves. We want it to be something that is that's easy to fit into your hectic schedules. And they were also meant to be designed to be something you could do in an hour or less. And each and every one of them turned into a 2-hour, 3-hour thing, right? Even this month's quest, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. I put in an hour on it, and then there was another, you know, half hour of scanning and then posting the blog and everything. And when you look at Ashley's and Dee's quest this time, they went above and beyond. They did some pretty extensive blogging on the subject as well, which I know takes time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I would say I've not put in less than 4 hours on any given quest. I'm slow. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but it's also, the all this things and extras and stages that go into it. And, and facing my own habits when trying to work through an art challenge and whatnot too. Anyway, I'm not trying to take away from you answering that curveball. And
the tension is, though, I mean, it's actually your point about being slow is so topic. That is so this episode's topic. And I want to dig at that. I want to check mark that and say, let's follow up on that. I'm going to come loop around on it again. But the tension is that you want it to be something that's actually challenging. Right, you don't want it to be draw 6 circles, you know, and then post a picture on Instagram, you know. Although that could actually be
that's something. I think you might have nailed Quest 2.0. This is funny. It's essentially it's a flash quest. It's like wham, here you go, doodle, snap a pic, post.
You know what? This is funny. Okay, I'm gonna. We're already 7 minutes in, and I don't want to overdo the curveball section. There's gonna be somebody. There's gonna be that one person who's like, "Get to the topic," but
yeah.
I just recently started a brand new 6-week series at the Ann Arbor District Library. I've been teaching every summer there, a 6-week course for, I think this is my 7th year doing this.
Wow.
Yeah, I can hardly believe it. I'd have to double check, but it's been like between 6 and 7 years, somewhere in the neighborhood. And this year, I rebooted the entire thing. I redesigned it entirely. And as a matter of fact, I need to share my notes with you on this, Rob, because I think we can actually use some of this material for some Lean Into Art stuff. But so I changed it. It was called Comic Book Academy, and I changed the name to Super Comics Challenge, and kind of inspired by interacting with you with Gameful Intended Design and working with guys like Dave Roman on his Comics Quickfire, I wanted to, and also in my own experiments in my class, my ongoing classes at the Ann Arbor Art Center, I wanted to infuse more Gameful Intended elements to my workshops. So it's not, here's a slide deck, I'm going to talk for 30 minutes, and then we're going to draw for an hour. Let's make this thing a lot more ongoing, interactive, high energy, and bring in some kind of, like, instead of lessons, they're games. And in games, there is an explicit activity and outcome, but the learning that happens in that activity outcome are not always 100% apparent to the player. You're playing for the fun of it, but you're picking up a skill, right? This has been discussed by a lot of people. Who was it? McGonagall.
James
McGonagall talks about this a lot.
Yeah, her book, fantastic book on this called Reality is Broken. Highly recommended.
Reality is Broken. Oh, I should be grabbing this for the show notes.
Yep. Subtitle is The Way Games Can Change the World. Something like that, but yeah. I've been in your classes, Jersey. You naturally use just a lot of fun elements as far as, even from the, you know, the improvisation you do, where like something new comes up and you're kind of playing off of it, and so everyone is on this path of discovery, and it's not about the routine and the regimen and the I try to chop the log, you know, so many times, now I chop it more effectively or whatever.
Sure.
You know, I draw a straighter line, I draw a rounder circle, I draw whatever. It's there's just new things that you help curate on the fly, which is super fun.
Well, and yeah.
But you go do even more than that. with that.
I pride myself on the fact that I'm ready to improvise in the classroom, and I do my best to try to work with the class's energy. I'm not always successful at it, but I'm always willing and ready to do it. But in this new iteration, I've engineered the structure to be even more game-like than I've ever done before, where this past Monday, I did one where it was a two-hour session, and it was all about character design, but it was actually five mini-events wedged into that 2 hours where I never did any instruction, never explicit instruction. I never showed examples. I never, you know, drew on a pad saying, this is how you do it. I said, do this thing. And they're like, why are we doing this thing? I don't know. Just do it. Sand the floor, you know? and then they're the like, best. Okay. And then they're like, I got a thing now. So like the first thing I said was like, everybody write down the name of your favorite character, a favorite character, or doodle your favorite character. And I said, now just using shapes and think about what's going on in that character's head. Give me the opposite of that character. That's a new character, you know? So if the character is roundish in shape or triangular in shape, what kind of, you know, take SpongeBob, when you make an opposite out of him, what do you get? Would you use a circle? Would you use a triangle? Why? And I ask them that question, why? Why are you doing that? And then I'm getting them to defend their choices to show that they already know how to do this. So now they got an opposite character. And I'm like, all right, now we're going to go through a thing. And this is something we did in one of the Lean Into Art workshops, which people can get at leanintoart.com/workshops. This is in the Creative Topics Variety Pack. I said, write down the first names of the following people. You know, a teacher who really helped you, somebody who annoys you for no reason, your best friend in fourth grade, and so on. All these different people from your own personal biography who elicit an emotional response in you. All right, now next to all those names, you got to write down one emotion word that either you feel about them or you think describes their character. All right, now that you've done that, scratch out those names. Those names don't matter anymore. Now you've got those emotion words. You're going to pick two. You're going to build two characters out of that. 20 minutes. That's all you get. And you're going to think about using shape, and you're going to think about their internal biography to express their inner life through the shape and through their pose. So they do that. Now they got two characters. I'm like, now we're going to talk about the shadow. The shadow is different than an opposite. The shadow is the you that you won't allow yourself to become. The shadow is the person who represents the one choice that you would never allow yourself to make. The person that you see across the room and say, I don't know why, but I don't like that person. Because they represent the outcome if you allowed yourself to express yourself in ways that are antithetical to your core beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're going to take those two characters you created. You're going to make shadows for those two characters. Boom, boom. And then at the end, I'm like, You've got a cast of four characters. Now you got to write a paragraph next to each character explaining what their hopes and what their fears are. And boom, you've got a cast. They didn't know what they were doing at the time, right? They're just following the instruction and playing along with the game. And then I worked in little like game moments where it's like if anybody contributes to the room in a positive way, like provides a learning experience where somebody does something interesting that I can take to the board and say, oh, this guy over here did something really cool. And I want to show you guys what he did. That's the instruction moment that came from the classroom. And then dumb little thing, but I just brought my buttons. I brought these comics, glow-in-the-dark comics buttons, which is like a drawing of like this. It's actually Casey Van Heist of wintersandlavelle.com, like screaming the word comics. And anybody who contributes positively gets a glow-in-the-dark comics button. And even the adults were like, after they contributed something, I'd be like, that was awesome. That was a great story idea. And they'd be like, where's my button? Where's my button? Well, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot your button here. You know,
yeah.
So the whole thing... The whole thing was this, like, it gets me thinking about the quests. Like, maybe the quests need to be something where the intended reflection is not explicit. Maybe the quests need to be sand the floor, paint the fence. And then if people participate in enough of them, there's an accumulation of skill sets that become apparent in, like, the fifth quest, right? Like, there's one through four is sand the floor, paint the fence. And then the fifth one is where Rob stands in front of you and tries attacking you, and suddenly you do all those things that Daniel's son is doing.
Yes. I'm like, tell me a story that makes me cry. Make me feel triumphant. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. This is interesting. I love this direction, and I absolutely want to take that workshop.
I'm thinking it needs to be a leanintoart.com workshop. I mean, I'm using the way I think of it is the Ann Arbor District Library is my comedy club where I get to test out new material. And then when I see something that really works, I get to go, okay, well, that's going to go into the larger stages where I work. So expect it soon.
Wow.
Next week, if anybody's in the Ann Arbor area, we're doing world building. I've got four games that I've developed to help you explore how to develop an environment for your characters and the way the environment figures into the plot of your story. And you won't understand how these things are connected until you get to the fourth game. So,
oh my God, you're going to addict people. This is brilliant.
I hope so. That's the goal.
Yeah. Love it.
So anyway.
Okay. So, wow. Okay. Very interesting exploration on quests and holy moly, what a fantastic resource. I can't wait to dive into that and into that more.
Shadowingtronics is saying in the chat, now I'm wondering what a bizarro SpongeBob would be like. That's exactly it. And yep. The idea is, and it wasn't explicit in the game, is that by exploring a character's opposite, you're exploring the character. You can't know what they won't be unless you know what they will be. And if you can't name what they are or what they will be, then knowing, you know, it's like it's based on the premise or the notion that a lot of us can name what we don't like more readily than what we do like. Mm. Right? Like if you say, like, what's your favorite holiday? What's your least favorite holiday? Which is easier to answer, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's what is it? The negativity bias? I mean, there was a book I just started reading, I don't have my Kindle next to me, but this is something I've been dying to find really, really good resources on because it's important. I think there's some really good insights to our own cognition and when we're trying to, you know, create things for an audience, how will people, you know, perceive the ups and downs of the things we're trying to express because I notice in myself and anecdotally in others where the negative thing about an experience is oftentimes given so much more weight than the positive things, and it just takes so much more of the positive and the contrast to notice them has to be so great. Mm-hmm. And what causes that? So there's, you know, for instance, there's one thing that led me to, as far as being on that hunt, I came across this this thing that's been used, I guess, for ages called the Kano model, that has to do with the
spell that
it's Kano, and there's some good articles on it at the userinterfaceengineering.com, UIE.com.
Okay.
And a Wikipedia article is great on it as well, but essentially it's sort of it's a chart that helps with planning the direction for a product and its features, where across the center are things that are just sort of expected, but the expectations increase over time, and I'll try to tell us pretty briefly because boy am I wandering afield. But like that's the center of it, and even though like you're trying to deliver, think of something that's been around a bit that people expect a lot about now. Like if you're trying to release a cable channel today, I'm totally making this up, but like think about like cable channels today versus like 20 years ago or something. They were more rough around the edges. Production values were lower or whatever. Or think about like an iPhone today versus one 5 years ago, and what do you expect out of it? It changes, right? And so the things that would now that you expect are increasing over time. And so now above, here's the other two curves that are very, very interesting, above and below that, as far as what you would plot. Above that are the delighters. Like, this is what makes you go, whoa, this is neat, and I'm emotionally compelled to check it out or whatever. And then below it are the detractors, and that's the other curve. So if this thing is, showing these capabilities, it takes me away from it, and it better be giving, anyway. They're different kinds of products that fit in with different business strategies along those different curves. And to me, it resonated with, people like to be, you know, like to enjoy these positive things, but then the negative ones end up holding so much weight. And how do you steer and deal with that? Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like we've talked about that before. I remember the Kano model from a past episode.
It's been a while.
I will link to it in the show notes. So cool. We got to get the topic because we're already 20 minutes in. So we're going to blast through this topic if we want time for everything.
Let's do it. Let's manage our time, Jersey.
So it's time to go 10,000 feet up. And a good march will set the tone to keep our determination. So 10,000 feet up. This is where we get abstract about the topic. We're going to discuss the topic from the point of view of philosophical discussion before we dive in into the get on the ground into the stupid helpy tips and the actual useful action items based on the discussion. So let me start by saying this is partially inspired by the quest for this time, like I said, which is largely about time management, reflecting on your time, and also getting a feeling for the rhythms that you have during the art day, right? Like by track, like one of the things that I really got a lot out of the Emergent Task Planner in using it, and it's at davidsay.com. We've talked about it 100 times in the show, but I will link to it in the show notes. Is just getting a sense of when I needed to stop, when I needed to get away from the table, when I needed to, you know, stop and stare out the window for a second to rest my eyes, and noticing that there's a rhythm to my day. But it was also inspired by something that I was talking about briefly the other day with Eric Orchard on Twitter. He's InkyBat on Twitter, ericorchard.blogspot.com. Great cartoonist. Just announced that he's got a book coming out from First Second, so there's his credibility. But I guess there was something going on where some cartoonists were talking about how they put in 20 hours a day on their comics or 18 hours a day on their comics. And my response was, is like, I can commiserate with the best of them. I've worked 18-hour days, and I've talked about it before. Like, whoo, that was a long day, and I'm still not done, you know? But the bend of the discussion kind of took into, like, are people really doing that? Or is this locker room talk, you know? And then the conversation took another bend of, like, should we be concerned about this? Because my attitude was like, well, you know what? When you do this long enough, you stop thinking about how much time it takes you to do something, how much time it takes somebody else to do something. You just do the thing. You find your own speed limit. And that's, again, that's where that ETP, David Say's Task Planner, was just so great for teaching me what my speed limit is so I can set my expectations during the day. But this is an ongoing problem, you know, and there's always going to be somebody coming new to this thing, and there's always going to be somebody who is, you know, maybe hasn't tackled this yet. So there's the topic, you know, working to your rhythm. And I was hoping we could start first with that whole idea of, like, this commonly held belief that longer hours and harder work net better results. Boxer from Animal Farm, right?
Mm. That's depressing, but yes. It's interesting. I end up violating the 10,000 foot and the stupid helpy tips because I end up mixing them together, and you know that might happen here. Sorry for the
perhaps
disclaimer.
Maybe this is an artificial division that we make, and maybe this is another thing we think about throwing out.
No, it's really good. I love the attempt, but like the I think about when did I start to notice that kind of thing? Putting in, like, you know, intensely long hours seem to not always be the right thing to do, and all that, because it's and what might lead us to that bias, right? And that ends up inherently how I end up, you know, coming up with hypotheses about, well, maybe these things, right? So what's the outcome? What are we looking for? What can we detect, and what do we see in the process of making stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, there's things that that come up thematically, like in projects, in any kind of, in any creative discipline. Calendars are a familiar thing. The clock is a familiar thing. We're good at measuring time. We observe time, and we're going to assign some kind of value to that. Typically, if you put in a lot of time, which you're good at measuring, and you notice it, are you going to say, oh man, I spent 18 hours on this? You know what I mean? I think somehow we get tied into that because it's so tangible versus, yeah, like, did I hit that tough to describe goal of the effect I wanted to have for this creative project? Then did I put it to the test to see if I had that effect? Yeah. Or whether that's an internal threshold or something you want to see. And I just think we end up going to time. Time is so... it's so plain to us, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah, it's human. Yeah. And there aren't a lot of things. I just heard this today from somebody. There aren't a lot of things in the adult world where we get any kind of tangible instant feedback. And it was actually in regards to, I was telling the story about the buttons in my classroom to somebody and how even the adults were on board with that idea. And it's like, well, think about it. When you're an adult, you put in and put in and put in all this effort into things. And very rarely do you get, like when you're a kid, you get a gold star on the board. You get a sticker on your paper, you know. But when you're an adult, you don't get that kind of feedback. You don't have any kind of... Your inbox is a never-ending list. Your inbox on your desk is a never-ending list. There's very few. Sure. And this is where we did an episode a while back called Me Party, where we talked about this, where you psychologically need to have an event to say, look what I did. Hooray for me. And yes, it's narcissistic, but humans are narcissistic, most of us. But it's also a way to mentally massage yourself to recognize the fact that, yeah, this effort is going someplace. But, yeah, and I think about, like, it's something I've talked about in past shows, might have been on this, might have been something else I did, but mm-hmm. I worked a job once at a newspaper where there was an in-hook and an out-hook of ads to be designed. I was working in the advertising department designing ads in Quark Express, and you could see... Right? You could see when you came in how much was on the in, how much was in the out. And when the in was empty, there was your feedback, right? I mean, you've talked extensively about feedback loops, so totally I get it. So here's the question, you know, does more time invested always result in better or more work?
And I would ask you to say, what can you define your results as beyond just time?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Like, why are you doing it? Who are you doing it for? Why do they want it?
Yeah.
What resources do you have to bring it about?
I need a stack of pages, Rob. I need a stack of pages to know that I did something. Otherwise, you know?
I'll generate you a stack of pages.
For those who are listening just the audio, I'm making a scribbling gesture.
Yeah. It's because I've run into that too, where I've had, you know, you put such tight constraints on time, where clearly time isn't, I'm not going over budget on that, but now am I reaching the same, you know, quality result and or other effect that I'm trying to get? So yeah, what is a result?
Right.
Answer that question with a question. What's a result then?
Thank you, Mr. Miyagi. All right, but let's address this thing about the cartoonist speed limit.
Yeah.
You know, what is the art? I need to know, Rob. What is the speed limit I should be aiming for? How fast should I be going when I'm doing this thing? Because I've read a lot of how to draw books. I read one by Christopher Hart. Read another one by Klaus Janson. I'll say different things. I got to know how fast I should be going.
Tetsuka? Is that
Tetsuka? Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't he the one that pretty much sets the bar so far that everyone's forever screwed?
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, him and Ryan Estrada, right? More or less. Yeah, I guess it's neat to know, right? Because when it's totally mysterious, you don't know the boundaries. The universe is infinite? Wait a minute. What's this infinite? How about the best in the world or the best ever? What do they do? How fast do they go? How many things do they produce? How good do they look or whatnot? Oh, okay. I guess that does give you some frame of reference, right? But how do you... I don't know. So how do you find your individual speed limit?
No, I'm saying I need to know the speed limit. I need to know the canonical one that applies to every artist, the golden ratio I got to be shooting for when I'm sitting at the desk. Because you yourself said at the top of this episode that you were slow at this thing. In the past, I have shown art to where I'm like, oh, this took about 3 hours. And you're like, I hate you so much. You know?
Oh, I do. Yes. That's still, it's ongoing. I super respect your skill, Jersey, and your speed is significantly faster than mine, and it's fun.
I was gonna say, in other words, I'm better than you.
You are. And look at my smile. Right? I mean, it's good in my opinion, to recognize that your skill is better, but like you aren't better. Right?
This much is true. This much is true.
And nor am I. Like that, I don't compare for that. I'm not trying to find something that echoes or amplifies my sense of self-satisfaction or fears about my inadequacy based on your capabilities. So, yeah, I just
What are you trying to get out of looking at other artists' speed limits?
Let's see. Inherently, I guess there's some I do think, oh, I should be faster. I've been thinking about, well, am I willing to pay the price to get to that speed and then find where I'm comfortable? Yeah, it's good it's a frame of reference, but what I do with it is, yeah, I guess sometimes it's detrimental where I do think, oh man, I wish I could do that. And so like inherently that's me going like, oh, you know, I'm not adequate in some way. But yeah, it's pretty short lived because I think it's really, I get excited about the lessons that are involved in there. And I probably sound like some stereotypical Dragon Ball Z character or something where I'm like, wow, look at him go. But I have the ability to recognize that. And I think that's what that's a huge thing about all this is gaining some kind of mindfulness about your process and how it applies to your time budget.
Yeah.
And I realize that I probably, like, for instance, am not going to budget for a scene with a ton of, 3-point perspective in it with the same budget that like you would, right? You'd be able to do that a bit quicker, no doubt. And it'd look awesome and all that. But, yeah, anyway, just I need to recognize that so I can be a good planner, you know, like being creative. Like I think managing my resources is part of the creative process.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, is that rather than looking at it as, oh, look at that, too bad, I guess I'm no good because I'm not doing it as fast as that person. Well, this is an opportunity for you to look at managing your time budget and your creative budget, right? That's a great metaphor. I like that a lot. Because everybody's managed money, right? In some way or another, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You can think about your creative resources the same way, right? Like, if I'm going to do this book in X amount of time, oh man, I do this all the time and I wasn't consciously thinking about it, but when we get to my quest, I'll talk about this a little bit, but I've done projects where it's like, I got to do this in a week. What materials can I use to get this done in a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
What things can I do to get the story told without going into big showboating, 2-page spread of a cityscape kind of thing, right? You're not doing that this time, Jerry, because you don't have time, right? So how can you work around that? Well, that's good. I like it.
Cool.
Do we want to kick on to the eternal rhythms and the effect it has on your work? Was there anything else in that part that you wanted to address?
No, I think that covers it. I think having, finding what your budget is and then, what's going to work within that.
Is that in the stupid helpy tip section? It better be. I'm going to write it down. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, no, it can be. Yeah, so we're thinking also about it. So much of this gets prompted by, okay, I've got a project that comes up. So for instance, friends and business acquaintances and what have you, it's like, hey, I'd like to, you know, hire you for a commission and I have this much money and this is kind of what I'm thinking of, or this is exactly what I'm thinking of. And either then you get to decide, well, all right, well, this is how much time I have for that. Or, hey, I have all this work to do and I'd also like to do a lean into art quest. Yeah. What do I have available for that? And that all this stuff, this other perspective is of that you've got in here in our plan for the show is like thinking about it from rhythmically, right?
Yeah, and like looking at, like, it's one thing to budget your time, but it's another thing to recognize that, let's say you're working 2 hours at a go. Let's say you're working 8 hours at a go. Let's say you're working 4 hours at a go. In all of those time periods, there is going to be a cycle. There's going to be a spin up, a moment where hopefully you hit your stride and it's working really well. Maybe you get lost in the work. That's the best. And then you look around and suddenly it's 4 hours later and you got to go to the bathroom. Or there may be like some, you know, gravity wells where you fall down and you're like, I don't know why this isn't working. I've erased this 60 times and I'm getting more and more frustrated. There's a rhythm to that I think is worth investigating and recording and journaling and reflecting on, because it tells you, again, going back to the ETP, in using that to track my days for like weeks and weeks and weeks on end and going back and looking at them, I saw where those things were happening, and I was making notes of like, okay, there was like an hour break here. Why did I need an hour break? And I had in the margins written what I was working on at that moment. You know, like I was putting, like, if I was halfway through penciling page 6, right? So page 6, panel 3, done. And then all of a sudden there's an hour break. I go back to page 6, look at page 6, panel 3. Oh, that's where I was trying to nail a really tricky pose that wasn't coming easy to me. And I needed an hour to get off of that emotional cliff. Not like I was crying and tearing my hair out, but you know what I mean, right? You get a little twisted up about this stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. But again, I see this theme of the how do we notice it? Because literally, yeah, there's a time, like I can think back to myself working on, like, well, for instance, like personal game projects and whatnot. And I would do sessions, I would do work sessions where I mostly focused on, like, I had my, you know, like building a flash game, right? Like right around, like, you know, 2003 or so. And, you know, I'd be working in the whole flash environment, which was just so cool, but it was really brilliant what Adobe did, where you're able to have this timeline for the animation stuff you're working on. You're able to do this drawing and whatever, and then you can have this coding stuff to add this behavior to all your things, and then you can constantly play with it in a sandbox. And it's a really neat environment, and I'd find no problem to be immersed in it for many, many hours at a time, feel like I'm learning a lot of things, but sometimes make good progress toward what I thought I needed to get done for the game, and other times, way not. And but feel like I was trying to chop the wood the whole time.
Yeah.
And that it's so wild how there can be this a bit of a lack of a fog or a lack of clarity on top of that, in my opinion, where, you know, you can be, you know, like, there's a theme in this to where you're trying to try to, you know, like lift that fog or discover some distinctions between this patch of fog and that patch of fog, and just get a little more clarity to work through the, you know, to find the, what's the difference between I'm in this mode of work and I'm able to accomplish something, or versus I'm in that mode, or is it me, or is it the thing I'm working on, or, you know, all that,
yeah,
stuff, the variables, you're trying to just form them out of. But wasn't there a time in your process, Jersey, before these variables that you now manage existed?
Yeah.
Where they were kind of...
Yeah, it was last year.
You know? Today. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't know what was going on. And that's when I would go on Twitter and say, I've been working 18 hours today and I'm a man because I did that, you know? I don't think I ever typed those words, but you know, there was an attitude of that in the posts.
Yeah.
But yeah, learning what I was saying, and I think what you're saying here, the common denominator here is, when is it procrastination and when is it useful, right? When I took that hour break, it's important to know, was that realignment? Was that me saying, I got to spin down and get in and cool off after that really difficult thing? And then get excited about it again, you know, to spin back up into it? Or was it me saying, post-traumatic stress disorder, geez, that sucked, I don't ever want to do that again. and then I'm, you know, I'm playing video games for an hour. And when you're doing the Flash thing and you're playing around in the sandbox and you're, you know, delighted by it and it feels like you're being productive, but you're just kind of going in a loop on it and being playful, when is that procrastination? When is that productive work, right?
Mm-hmm. And, well, there you go. And in trying to find that rhythm, you're trying to basically, in some ways, when it's that foggy, it's almost like music that has less form. It's ambient. It's like, wow. Like maybe there's different change in tone or something.
It's music for airports, right? By Brian Eno.
But what you're trying to do is say, oh, okay, I need to get this to be more of a tighter something. And mm-hmm. you're trying to break that into more, you know, moments that do have some kind of flow, some kind of rhythm. I don't know if that's crazy abstract, but it kind of feels like that to me before I can even know this variable is there, right?
Yeah.
It's got to transition from before I knew to when I knew.
It's like knowing that over time you learn when you're going to get hungry during the day, right? And it's like, oh, it's 12:30. I'm going to be hungry in the next 25 minutes. And if I don't do something about it, it's not like I'm going to suddenly have like this, you know, like I'm going to go into some kind of shock, but you get a sense of what your body's rhythms are of like, I got to eat this time, and this time. And if I don't, I'm going to pay for it later kind of thing. You get a sense of that too in your creative rhythms of the day. And I think that the only way I was able to beat that one and put a name to some of those variables was through journaling. And journaling can mean a lot of things. And we'll get to that in the on the ground section, I'm sure. I want to touch on another thing, another commonly held belief. Muscling through. We've both been on deadline. You're under deadline right now. I'm actually just starting a new deadline. Oh, by the way, I'll sandwich this in the episode. Shadowingtronics made me promise that I wouldn't forget to announce this. I got the gig to as the artist of the new Max Steel's RoboForce, the comic.
That's so awesome. Congratulations, dude.
Thank you.
Totally rocks.
I'm very, very excited about it. I think
drawing RoboForce now.
RoboForce. It was a 1982-83 toy line from Ideal. They had one cartoon special. I have made my love of that toy line public for many years. And throughout my teen and early 20s, I would get made fun of by some of my friends because why would you like these hugging trash can robot toys? But I do love them very much. And when I heard the toys were coming back out, I tried to get in front of that and say, like, hey, I'm the guy. Let me draw this thing, please. And the guy hired me. So... John Kent is the guy who owns the rights to the toys. He's making the toys, coming out this October, and I'm working on the comic right now. Just started the first few pages, and I'm super excited about it. Anyway, so this idea of I want to stay on topic. Deadlines. When you're under deadline, there's nothing for it but to muscle through. Put in as much time as you can. It's never enough, right? You try to maximize what little resources you have and you work like a dog until you can't work anymore. And then it's either done or it's not done, right? Most of the time it's done. I don't know about you and I don't know about any of the gentle people listening to this show or watching the show right now, but every time I go through that whole deadline cycle, I turn around and go, why can't I do that with my personal work? Why can't I just muscle through like that every day of my life? One, realistically, I would look like the guy who drank from the wrong chalice in Indiana Jones 3 after like 2 months of living like that. That would be terrible. But two, I don't know what my point two was. I'll just ask you, you know, as a guy who said, why can't I just muscle through every day of my life? Is muscling through always a good idea? There's a romance to that idea of just, you know.
Let's see. So muscling through, I look at muscling through is a tool. It's a technique. It's something that I can choose to employ, and I've practiced it. I'm fairly adept at that approach, but even with that, I would say through familiarity and through thinking about it and through journaling and starting to notice patterns is that muscling through, it reminds me a little bit of the technique of when the eager martial arts student just kind of throws all their weight at the different, you know, different opportunities. And then an early martial arts student looks like is a wonderful, welcome, you know, exciting thing in class. But to the more advanced students and the instructors, they look like a bag of targets. And that exuberance, they're operating in the fog mode, right? And it's just, it's all this. And then, so I noticed that, well, I think there's a time for that, there is a time for that exuberance if it's applied to accomplish the result that I'm looking to accomplish. And if the result is giant, then I know here's a heuristic. So I think you come up with heuristics as you keep doing this, right? So I have a heuristic that if I have a task that is like bigger than a day, involves some complex things, I know I'm going to have to break it down into some smaller things. I mean, heck, think about the process of making most comics, where a lot of times we separate our concerns. We think about the pacing and the content and the timing of the story when we're thumbnailing and you know, drawing it, maybe doing outline writing, whatever. And then we start to refine and go further from there. And chances are, by breaking it down into smaller steps, maybe you do have these sort of muscle through bursts for each step. And by doing in those stages, it's less of a there's less wasted effort, right? Mm. So in that exuberance of the pushing, you're still a human being, and you're still, you're in general a human being, and you're your specific human being with your own quirks. That chances are, if you're trying to notice, well, when am I not as effective? What times a day am I getting enough sleep, and all that stuff? That's where muscling through really does start to break down. And here's the wicked thing with any of these techniques is that you can be locked into your own assumptions without doing those verifications and checkpoints and saying, how am I doing on my budget? Am I getting where I thought I'd be going? Kind of stuff. That's where, even if you have a train wreck of a project, at least if you're journaling along the way, you've got some record to go back to say, oh wow, I was really, you know, not paying attention to this whatever that I thought, like, wow, this thing that's this I don't know, a book I thought I was, you know, getting so much out of, that I was investing this time, it really didn't help me that much for what I needed on the project or whatever.
Pouring all of my attention in the wrong place, right? We got to get this thing out the door today. Well, I can't give it to you until it's perfect. Let me muscle through and burn out my last calories on this final corner of the page. When it's like, no, dude, you've got five other pages that you aren't, they're in the fog right now, right? And you're not thinking about the whole entire process. Don't worry about making that little tiny corner that nobody's going to notice perfect. Let's make the whole thing cohesive and complete rather than, you know, the forest for the trees metaphor, that old thing.
Yeah. Let's see.
You've got a great line in here in the notes that I want you to read. It's the final bullet point before on the ground. I love this.
Oh, well, okay. So one of the things that could drive you to getting into that mode is what, right? So losing a client, to gain a client, to you know, whatever it is, a lot of times where we might be fearing losing something, and that could seem like it's really good justification to, well, okay, it's time to muscle through. in my opinion, fear isn't an awesome planning tool. So what I wrote is fears are typically not great at that bigger scope of planning. Pretty great for reflexes, you know. Yeah. Might be helpful for the next couple minutes, but
yeah, it good for keeping you alive.
Heck, exactly. Don't get eaten.
All right. Well, with that, I think we better get on the ground with some useful bits, things that people can actually walk home with and start using. Whoa.
My word.
I hadn't used that one before. I clicked it by accident. but I guess we're on the ground now. The music said so.
Exactly.
Okay, so time to talk about some things. Like, okay, we talked about this stuff about like your day has a rhythm. Journaling. We talked about journaling as being an effective way to learn your rhythm and discovering what your artistic and creative budget is, what your speed budget is. But going back to the initial points about, you know, this whole idea of like, oh, well, Ryan Estrada can do it next amount of time. You know, Krishna Sadasivam can do it next amount of time. I guess I'm no good. My first stupid helpy tip to throw on here is that there's a difference between comparing oneself to others and mining the experience of others. When I find out Ryan Estrada can do this in 5 minutes, people like Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com, take a drink, are very generous with their process. And when he bragged about how he got like some ungodly amount of pages flatted and colored in like, what was it, like an hour or something like that?
It was something crazy like that. Yeah,
it was absurd.
Somewhere around 200 or something. I'm trying to think. It was nuts.
Yeah, it was nuts. And it was all through like automation through Adobe Photoshop, and it was very clever. He talked about it on the Lean Into Artcast. I'll link to it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But all we did was say like, hey Ryan, how'd you do that? And he's like, oh, I'll come on your show and I'll show you, you know. And then that becomes, okay, this is an opportunity to mine his experience to enhance my experience, right? Rather than say, aw, nuts. Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens when you compare, is you end up invariably saying, aw, nuts, at some point or another. It's more, for me, it becomes, I'd rather be a vampire. I'd rather suck on their throat veins and
drain their essence.
Drain their essence of Gelfling and bring it into my own artistic process.
What if so using more of the mining metaphor than the creature of the night, but so if you're mining, you've got resources, you are gathering, right? And yeah. So are all resources aren't fit for all problems, right?
Right.
They're materials. Maybe they fit what you're currently working on or what you'll work on next, or not.
Yep, and that's where the mining metaphor works a lot better. Because, yeah, it's raw materials that need to be refined in some way and processed in some way in order to be useful to you, right? And then, I mean, another thing, this is where I get all dad, is that, you know, comparing in order to judge oneself is a slippery slope. You know, it's like somebody could say, ah, yes, Jersey. But comparing oneself to others could be also to set goals. I want to achieve what he achieved or she achieved in X amount of time. Yeah, you could use it to set goals. That's not bad. You know, I want to, you know, that's how I got started. As I said, I want to do what George Perez did when I was 10. You could be learning from other people's experience by looking at their lives and comparing your life to theirs. Like, well, I don't want to do what that guy did. I heard about what happened to this gal. I know not to approach things in that way now. But, you know, I think the thing I said on Twitter to Eric when we were talking about this is that, like, you know, comparing yourself to others in order to see where you measure up, clout.com, anybody, that's the road to madness.
So what are you evaluating? Let's see, what you're evaluating in that case, does it really help your creative project?
Right. I mean, yeah, it's a form of good selfishness. I mean, that's the thing I like to think about, is like, what is healthy selfishness? What's the difference between vanity and selfishness? Maybe that's a better way to put it. One way is to say, boy, am I pretty? Am I pretty? Hey, mom, am I pretty? The other way is to say, what's mine, what benefits me, what is nourishing to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And so if you're doing that comparison, then I think you're equipped to somehow evaluate. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this makes sense. You know what? Let's see. It's much like what you describe as a technique to notice, to start exploring storytelling via things that are very interesting to your taste, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have an aha moment as you're watching a movie and you think, well, wait a minute, what? Or you know, you have some kind of reaction. You start breaking that down and exploring why. And so, same thing. So you see something that's inspiring, such as you know, the time it takes Jersey to complete most of his pages and stuff, and you think, aha, very interesting. I care about that. Why do I care about that? Well, I would like to, you know, see that, see myself get more efficient. How do I do that? And then, so yeah, I mean, it's worthy just for that alone, because it's great to notice.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
I want to get through some of yours, your on the ground bits in here, because you added a lot.
Let's see. Well, okay. So thinking about on the ground, one of the things that we often endorse via our podcast and our workshops at Lean Into Art is basically challenges or mini projects, right? So we've got the quests. That's a possible outlet for this, for exploring, for clearing that fog and making it. So for instance, I mean, look at, I know we're not talking about the quests, but we'll notice when we do that, let's see, what was it? It was Lee and,
and D,
they are making some stuff and they are reflecting on it, and they has a completion to it. And so mini projects are a big deal, right? So yeah. Doing a mini comic, getting the experience of the full life cycle of a project and doing that a lot helps with these meta skills of, oh, what's a good resource? What fits my process? Where am I trying to? And that'll help as far as the time and the rhythm, because it represents a complete thing versus some areas of so for instance, when I was working on that game project in the early 2000s, I would get distracted by just finding better ways to do stuff. Yep, I'm gonna find a better way to generate a random number, and now I'm gonna find a better way to, you know, better is always better, right? Sounds better. Nope. No, I mean, not not in that case, but it sure seems attractive. But anyway,
yeah. Actually, you know what? Did you watch that series called Strip Search? The one that the Penny Arcade guys
did? I didn't get around to that yet. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I found it to be a lot more compelling than I thought I would. I was surprised at how emotionally invested I became in that show after a few episodes. But they do a good job. And I don't want to spoil the series for you, but they do a good job with one of the challenges where it's really about creating a brand new webcomic pitch. And instead of saying, all right, here's your time frame, come up with a killer webcomic, present it to me, you know, by this end of this time period. They say, we want this many character designs, we want this many strips, and we want it formatted in this way. Like, it had like real serious parameters, and there was like a real, like there was a closure to the whole challenge, where at the end, it's not about creating something that you have to create for years, although you could if it's good, but it had the wrapping of you're doing X amount of strips, like 20 strips or whatever, and that's it. And then you can walk away from it. You know, but the thing about a mini challenge, like a mini comic, like a Lean Into Art quest, or even something like, you know, Tyler James's 30 characters challenge, coming up with a new character every day for 30 days, which is coming up. Oh my gosh, that's almost on us. That's in September, isn't it? No, November.
November, yeah.
Okay, so it's a few months away yet. But Or like Dean Tripp's Project Rooftop, where it's like take a superhero character, redesign them. The thing I mentioned at the top of this episode, where just take one of your favorite characters, design their opposite. That's the whole process of doing a graphic novel or an ongoing webcomic in miniature. It's a microcosmic version of that rhythm that we're talking about. And journaling that and reflecting it sounds like a lot of work. At least I get that feedback from people. It's like, that ETP sounds like an awful lot of work. It's actually not really when you actually try it, and the benefits far outweigh the time invested, I think, personally. Go ahead.
It's really tough to sell the benefits of some of these things that really just sound like, like generally it's a big deal, where what you're doing is you're finding a way to discover more moments in the experience that you had. And then you end up finding better ways to mine that experience. I'll abstract it all away and I'll forget all sorts of great lessons if I don't do that.
Yep. You just posted a new Polytechnicast, we should mention. That's at egz.me.
Yeah.
And, I'm listening to it and I'm listening to you just basically doing a diary entry. Here's what I've been up to, and here's me. It was clear that you had a framework in your mind of these are the topics I'm going to discuss. Mm-hmm. But then as you're going, I'm listening to you try to piece together takeaways on the fly, right? Mm-hmm. And this is by no means any kind of critique of the show. It was more of how interesting that the simple act of sitting down and making a commitment to journal brings your mind into confrontation with this idea of developing takeaways, right? You want to say something that here's the reason I'm saying this. You're trying to justify the reason you're talking about it. Mm. And maybe that justification is Monday morning quarterback. Maybe that justification is real insight, but it's a good rhythm, I think, to get into. So doing something like a micro journal podcast and people be like, well, nobody's going to listen to it. That's even better. You don't have to think about it then. You don't have to worry so much about performing for an audience. Just do it for your own benefit.
Journaling takes all sorts of forms. It can be just task checklists. It's a little better if it's capturing a little more than that, because it, telling you how do you feel about it and the ups and downs and stuff. Things like that kind of journaling is powerful research that you get to conduct on yourself. And I resisted mentioning it, but it reminds me of the kind of research that Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi did in the 60s and 70s and 80s, I think, for his book Flow. I do not remember the decades he did that, but it was essentially he was just looking for how do people get to this this situation where they just are really awesome at what they do? How do they feel about it? And what's all involved in that? And it's just, it's in a lot of his research. I mean, he essentially had, he gave out pagers and he would just call people or have his people call people and just do these interview people like quick on the spot. How do you feel right now? What are you doing? What, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember. I don't know what his survey was, but like, it's amazing, right? You could survey yourself, page yourself. And
it would be trivial to set something up like that too, to like just set up like an if this then that rule to like text yourself every X amount of times with the following questions, right? Once a day, text me at this time to survey me on this thing, right? And you could set up like a Google form. You could set up a Google form that you just check in on. Like you set an alarm on your phone, ding, 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 time to take the survey.
Yep.
And you just... Here's like you set up a Google form with like maybe we should do like a sample Google form, like a self survey. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah.
So self survey Google form. But yeah, like just to fire off something like that just to so you can collect, because then the Google form will send that data to a spreadsheet that you could go back and look at, and you could export the spreadsheet as a CSV file or as an Excel file. And you can tabulate the data, find out how you're feeling, get a bar graph of this is how I'm feeling about different things at different times of day.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the qualitative, quantitative, hybrid research kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Really useful. Other forms of takes, there are apps that will do this too. If you have a smartphone or on OS X, or both in this case, but there's an app called Day One.
Day One.
That I try to challenge myself where when it pops up, I write something in it. Mm. And I'll be darned if when I look back at that, no matter how mundane or whatever, I think it captures some essence of where I was at and what I was.
You know, the funny thing is we were talking at the top about like quests and I'm like, just draw six circles. And then we were like, nah, I'd be stupid. And wait a second.
Hey. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just a simple thing like that can actually express a lot.
Yeah. So just, yeah, structured or unstructured self-interviewing. And yeah, that'll help. And so why would you do that? Again, you know, not to get overly explicit, because then you've got the thing that you can look back on. And it's going to be better than if you just kind of sit there and, you know, ponder while looking at the sky.
Yeah. Another thing that I do is, I mean, since I've always got a phone on me, whenever I'm working, I'm taking pictures of my process all the time, even if I'm not sharing them. Mm. And that itself is a moment to stop and reflect. It's partially based on psychological trick, get myself motivated, saying, look at you've passed another threshold. It's also in case this page is awesome and I want to share it with people, this might be something to brag over. So let's grab the different parts of the process so I can put that all up in a nice blog post for all its glory. You can see the humble origins of this beautiful piece of artwork that I created after all, right? I won't deny that that's part of it, but then also, yeah, part of it is journaling and reflecting and going back and filtering through in my, private Flickr feed. Oh yeah, there's like what my pencils used to look like. Look at how they're changing over time. It's interesting. So
exactly. Living out life like a one big DVD extra.
I kind of like it.
I love it. I thought it would be, yeah.
All right, so with that, is there any other ones you want to throw in before we kick over to quests?
No, let's roll on. Let's go let's do the quest. We're already having
All right, well, then it's time for the quest theme. Look, I know that's not the quest theme. That's the Metroid Samus Aran introduction theme. But I've co-opted it for our quest theme because I like it.
It's funny. I thought it was the quest theme already. Or that was the quest complete thing, whatever. Anyway, it's good. Oh, yeah. It's exactly.
It's also, yeah, item collect sound. Secret collect. But
Jersey, you did this huge time management quest.
Yeah, do we want to start with mine and then we can go over to the leaners?
Well, yeah. Well, tell us, like, let's do a quick flyby about this whole thing. Like, what's the difference between 0 and 60?
Oh, right? Yeah, I guess we should read the quest real quick,
yeah,
huh?
Do a quick, yeah, let's fly by this thing.
All right, so let me pull it up. Or do you want to read it? No, I got it pulled up here.
Okay.
So yeah, the big idea was is what's the difference between 0 and 60? Let's finding your artistic speed limit, and it was inspired by some recent conversations I had with some friends, and my own experimentation on my own work. I posted an image a while back where it was a 2-page spread for a Boulder and Fleet story that I want to do, a Boulder leaping at a giant robot, and I was like, I've only got 2.5 hours to do something before I've got an appointment. Let's see how fast I can belt this thing out. And I belted it out. And then, I walked away from it, came back, looked at it, and was like, hey, it doesn't look too bad. You know, when I was rushing, it seemed kind of bad. But then when I came back, I looked at it again. It's like, not so bad. I wonder how much faster I could be doing things. So it's partially, you know, gleaning things from the emergent task planner like we were talking about today, trying out little experimental mini things, and designing something that the leaners can take on that would actually be productive, where it wouldn't interfere with their workload. So the regular quest was track your time while creating your next thing. You're going to be creating a thing anyway. So this shouldn't take much more than adding like another 30 minutes to your day by just tracking your time during the day and making some reflections on this. And I asked some very carefully chosen questions. At what point in the process did you need a break? At what point did you stop out of hesitation? When did you stop out of frustration? And what parts of the process went faster for you, slower, and why do you think that is? And then the heroic quest. the if you really got a hankering for a challenge, select a previously finished piece of art that you're pretty happy with. And you think, it turned out pretty good. One that demonstrates you at your best. And then set a timer and give yourself 1 hour to draw that page again. And I did throw in the, I don't know what you'd call it. Not a cheat, but a handicap. Is that you can use the non-photo blue pencils of the page, right? If you have them. Oh, or you can print out the page in non-photo blue to re-ink it rather than drawing it entirely from scratch. Because depending on your art style and the page in question, redrawing an entire image from scratch in under an hour would be pretty tough for a lot of people, myself included. So then compare the two, how they differ. You know, is the new one any better or worse than the old one? Were there any shortcuts that you had to take or that you discovered through doing this? And then I threw in bonus points if you show the two images to a non-artist and capture their reactions. I didn't have time for that, so I lose those bonus points. And then share your results in a blog post and Twitter with the LIA Quest 7 tag. So that was the quest. And I did mine. Let me pull it up. Screen share. How you doing? There you go. Start screen share. You see that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So I'm pulling up on my screen. This is at comicsaregreat.com/LIAQuest7. And what I did is I took a page from the front Petty Dreadful, a comic that I was updating and has been on hiatus while I'm dealing with other deadlines. And it's a comic that I've been inking in Manga Studio. So you can see the Manga Studio 4 image on the right. I don't know how clear that's showing up, Rob.
Oh, it's showing up really clear. I mean, okay, it's a still good image. So I think that helps with the hangout.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the fact that it's not moving. Mm-hmm. And then so I printed out the pencils because since I'm inking it in Manga Studio, I still had the pencils. So I printed out the pencils in non-photo blue and I inked it with the Pentel pocket brush pen and the Pentel color brush pen. Now, here's the thing. This new version of the front that I was working on with this new art style was largely inspired by something Kim Holm of freecomics.no, instructor at Lean Into Art, he said to me a couple years ago. I did a series of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe character redesigns, which you can find on my blog. And he said, boy, I'd really love to see the characters in the front rendered in that style. So I did a series of character redesigns of my own characters in that new cartoony style, and I really liked them, and I was belting out the character designs in like 45 minutes or less. So I was like, man, I wonder how much faster I could do the book, because one of the problems I had with the front in the past is that the pages were taking 8 to sometimes 20 hours to complete. And so then I started working on the book, and I get 3 pages in, and I'm noticing it's taking 14 to 16 hours to do a page. I'm like, why is that? Because is it because I'm making it into more work? Am I being too precious? And should I go back to using the style I used for the Boulder and Fleet mini comic, which was largely invented out of necessity of trying to do a mini comic in a week, right? So just do everything freehand. Use the brush pen. Don't be too precious about all the details. Just get the story told. So, the takeaway, as far as which one I like better, is I'm split on that. I don't know which one I like better. I like them both for very different reasons. I like the Manga Studio one because I got these nice, clean, and crisp lines, but I love the warmth and character of the brush pen lines. I don't like how necessarily undetailed the brush pen page is.
Oh, that's funny. You know, this in some ways, this reminds me of how, well, when a band performs a song live versus recorded, right? So you've got the super crisp and the beautiful Manga Studio rendered one. And then the brush pen. I mean, they're both by your hand, and they completely look like Jersey Droz drew both. But yet you're right. Is it warmth? What is that? It's an analog feel? Like, it's so funny to quantify that, but yeah, the brush pen has it.
Yeah, there's a texture there. The dry brush I really fell in love with the dry brush effect of making things look lived in and feeling like real places by using dry brush.
Right.
and using it as a way to flesh out a little bit of shape in a with just like a quick little brush stroke. Whereas with the manga studio page, because everything is in pure black and white, I have to do all that fleshing out in color, which is fine. But yeah, there's something that feels more human about the brush pen page to me. It feels more like it's more apparent that a person was here, whereas the manga studio 4-1 looks so polished by comparison that you know, it's like it lends to the assumption that that comics aren't made by people. You know, you ever heard that? Like people say, like, oh, do people make comics? Like people who think that like machines make this art or something.
That strikes me as pretty wild. But I suppose, that's interesting.
But one of the other big observations is like when I finished the brush pen page, I was like, wow, did I just really do that in an hour? And I actually did it in like under an hour. It was like 55 minutes or something. Like I had enough time to scan it and do like a little bit of digital cleanup before my 60 minutes was up.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised.
Okay.
But some of the other things that you may notice is some elements on the pages, on the brush pen page are in different locations than on the Manga Studio page because Manga Studio permits you with digital inks to ink on layers. So after I've inked the thing, I can move the elements around. Whereas with the brush pen one, not so easy.
Right. Yeah, there are some, there's different, you know, positioning things.
If you look at panel two.
Do you have an example? Sorry.
Yeah, like on panel two, in the bottom of the panel, there's a rock there. And that rock forms a tangent with the action line on Dudley Courage's arm as he's swatting that giant piece of wall onto Dick Courage. See that tangent there on the brush pen page? And I was able to move the swoosh over just a tiny bit in Manga Studio to diminish the effect of that tangent.
Ah. Wild. Yeah. You have more
flexibility.
Flexibility. That's a good way to put it. Cool.
And then obviously, you know, the method I use for coloring would be drastically different on the brush pen page because at the Manga Studio page, because everything is in anti-aliased lines, you can use the B-Pelt plugins to just drop in the flats, pre-flats, and then it speeds up the whole coloring process. Whereas with the brush pen page, because of the analog anti-aliased lines, I would have to hand flat it or get a production assistant to hand flat it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would change the overall production time. I may be inking it faster, but I just added more time to the flatting process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Yep,
so there's a lot of trade-offs with this that I don't know how I feel about. I like them both though. That's the weird thing.
Yeah, me too. They both completely accomplish the job of that page, and it's they're exciting and super clear. You added that. What's so funny it seems like things are so obvious when you mentioned the pure time it took you to get to the pen stage, but then considering all the stages, what do you think, you know, setting your opinion on, you know, other ways how you feel about it, but just from a process efficiency, which way do you think you would go?
Well, I feel like I don't know, Rob. Because one thing that I think was a really nice takeaway of this is that doing the brush pen thing and setting that timer for 60 minutes, it prevented me from doing the procrastination noodling, right? It prevented me from like, oh, I got to get this slab of wall just so, which in the Manga Studio version, I know I did that. I sat there and I futzed and futzed with like the debris lines. Like the wear and tear on the wall slab, you know, and I'm undoing lines over and over again. I'm trying this kind of line. I'm trying that kind of line.
Oh, undo, yeah.
And with the brush pen, no undos. It's like I throw the line down and I hope for the best. And if it's really egregious, I'll white it out or fix it in Photoshop. But for the most part, if it's like 80% there, it's like, okay, just keep going, you know? And I did like the fact that I love the idea of training myself to walk away from my pages more often, you know?
Oh my gosh. See, yeah. One thing I really need if I'm spending a lot of, I spend a lot of time on most any page I do because it takes me a bit of time. So I often try to divide it up on across multiple sessions where I will have, you know, so if I actually have time to you know, keep cranking on multiple pages, or if I have different single page illustrations to work on, that's a good situation for me, because then I get to take a break from looking at one or the other. And I just get new insight. I get to like see it with fresh eyes and all of a sudden come up with better observations. But
yeah.
Does that ever happen to you, or is that a...
Sure. Actually, that's something I want to bring up, Dijusan's quest, because yep. That's one of the things that I think you can walk away from hers, is when you look at hers, mm-hmm. This is one of the great things about doing these kinds of mini challenges, is on the left... Sorry, folks, we're listening in the audio. You can go to the video, and we'll link to these in the show notes, too. But Dee started with an old version of her characters, an old drawing she did, where she liked the concept. But she, you know, like her work has changed in the years that she's been working on her fabulous, fabulous, wonderful webcomic, Gray Is. And you look at the one on the right, and you have a stark example of how she's improved as a digital painter. Mm-hmm. As an illustrator, how her character designs have changed. Talk about fresh perspective. So, like, walking away from it for a day can do that. Like, you come, like I was talking about that earlier, like that Boulder and Fleet page I was mentioning, where it's like, I drew it in 2 hours. I wasn't sure if it was any good. Gave myself a day, came back, had a new perspective on it, had a new way of looking at it. Looking at the pencils the next day can do that. And also... one of the reasons I said choose a previously created piece of art was not just about expedience sake, but I was hoping people would pick older pieces of art and maybe learn and see how far they've come with it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So I love that she did this, that she took an old piece, and you can see how the character designs have matured, their physical forms have matured. They look physically older than when she started out. Then also her painting has gotten a lot more subtle.
Yeah, it's totally different techniques. Sort of with the gradient lines as far as the shadows and the highlights and whatnot. It's more of a cel shaded feel.
Yeah, the original is very cel shaded, and the new one looks more like it's digitally painted.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And so she journaled her observations on, like, why did this take 3 hours to finish, right? Mm-hmm. And she goes through, you know, I used one layer for the new version where there were over 35 layers. Wow.
Yeah, that's, I've heard others, when they're starting out working in Photoshop, use typically a lot more layers than once you get more comfortable.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Commitment.
And then she went through and she answered all the questions. At what point in the process did you need a break? When I was low on daily needs, or when I finished a page? Sometimes I had to get up and move when I was angry that something wasn't turning the way I wanted. When did you stop out of hesitation? And she says, when a panel is showing a big background, or when a page isn't really interesting in terms of scene or story, scene showing strangers talking or a place that's full of crowds of people. I'm with you there, Dee. When did you stop out of frustration? Page composition, contrast, and balance is off. Starting at a page you worked on for over 3 hours and not liking it as a whole can be a daunting thing. I always get up and move around because staring won't do much. I'll get back and spot what's wrong instantly. Oh, there we go, Rob. That's what you were just talking about. Coming back to it later to get a new perspective. Or I just realized that I'm just being too hard on myself. That too. So did you see, Rob, I think you saw that picture, that sketch I did of Max Steel from mm-hmm. RoboForce. I posted it on Instagram today. I guess yeah. I should link to that in the show notes too. When I started that sketch, I was having coffee with my Thursday morning coffee group, and I was being distracted by the discussion that was going on. Actually, I should go ahead and just pull it up. How about this? Because I'm doing screen sharing, right? Instagram.com/JerseyDrews, if you want to follow me there.
Yep, following you.
Oh, I know you are, Rob. But let's see, where is it? Oh, here we go. So this is the one I posted today. And I was about, I was just through the skeletal process of this sketch, and I was hating the way it was going, really hating it. I was like, this is awful. You know, it's like, I got to draw something else. And then I just thought, well, I'll just do a crummy sketch. That's all. And let the guys talk to me while I'm doing the crummy sketch. And then I got about a third of the way through. And when I was starting to throw on those little rendering sketch lines, I looked at it again after, you know, like letting myself fall in and out of distraction from the conversation. And then in the end, I was like, hey, this is actually a pretty good sketch. So, but there's always that point, like what Dee's talking about here, where, you know, like you start working on, you put 3 hours into something and you're not liking it because you're too deep in it. And you just got to get away from it for a second. Let yourself think about something else.
That's huge. Yeah, because that could be, can just feed in on itself. Yeah. And yeah, the fresh perspective, it's like there's so many different reasons to do it. Yeah. Like I may need an emotional break from the intensity or the effort or yeah. And it's interesting. Yeah. In Dee's, you know, the commentary completely, you know, shares a similar experience. Or I mean, sometimes I guess I can feel like I don't know where to put the emphasis next. And I think if I look at it again, I will see where to put more work, because I don't want to just have the same kind of a sameness where it's all the same amount of detail, all the same amount of rendering or shading or what have you. And then, you know, it's like I can find my focus again if I'm able to step back.
Oh, another thing I wanted to mention that Dee did that I think is really smart is she live streamed her quest as she worked on it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that was a way to help keep her on task, you know, because she's got an audience there watching, right? Can't procrastinate too much when people are watching you, Big Brother and all that. But she even got like, you know, she did the regular quest as well, and she journaled her experience, and she found, you know, she actually had some recordable results that you can read on her blog post, which we'll link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But here's like the capper I wanted to throw on the end of hers. I love the fact that she says at the end, this was a very fun quest and I learned a lot from it. I'm more committed to keep an eye on the clock now. It's not an hour, it's 60 minutes, and that's a lot. That's great.
Ah, that's a cool way to put it.
Yep. So that's djusan.com. Again, we'll link to it in the show notes. Reader Comic Gray is, she's an awesome illustrator. Then we got Ashley. This is Control-Alt-Lee on Twitter. And she went through, and she did a ton of journaling. Mm-hmm. She went through every step of the process. And I really encourage people to look at this. If you're like, well, what do I journal? Look at what Ashley did. Because she went through and chronicled every step of the process and even put resources to everything she used in her process to make this thing. So great. But going back to the questions, and I wanted to see how she answered them. At what point in the process did you need a break? Biological needs. Yep. Unfortunately, we are organic creatures, and I curse my body every time I have to go to the bathroom because I'm working after all. Yeah. When did you stop out of hesitation? Well, I'm an amateur artist. I had to stop for information I could invent or know offhand since I wanted the painting to have a high level of detail. Lots of pausing was to confirm how something worked, looked, its color, to find resources. Ignorance, I guess, stopped me a lot. Now, here's something that I think is interesting. When you go back to Dee's, Dee was talking about how early on she would use lots and lots of layers, and now she knows more Photoshop shortcuts. She's more adept at Photoshop, so she was able to do most of this, I think all of this new piece on one layer. Journaling this kind of thing means that you're collecting your knowledge, and you can watch that knowledge base grow. So here's Dee saying, like, oh, I used to be less experienced, now I'm more experienced. Here's Ashley saying, you know, I had to learn new things in order to take on this quest, but now she knows them, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. When did you just stop out of frustration? When I got to a really boring part, except on Wednesday when I was feeling really sick. That day it was fun to clean up all the extra colors outside the lines. Before that, I kept putting it off. Awesome to journal the fact that you got sick in there. It's good to remember these kinds of things, because when we are evaluating our productivity, we should know what our health situation is like, because that affects the overall productivity, right?
Absolutely.
If we're just looking at a Trello list and going like, oh, I only got six things done this week, and you forget that on Tuesday you had like really bad stomach cramps, right?
Oh, right. Or yeah, I mean, and other big events too, where it's like, oh, I needed to, I don't know, for instance, replace a toilet or yep. something.
Yeah,
right?
which you had to do recently.
Yeah. that takes up a bunch of time. And so yeah. if you're like, well, this thing just gets to interject itself and then get forgotten, that, I don't know, that's just not going to help the process. It's just going to seem like, well, you know, I didn't move as fast or whatever. Things like, caretaking too, as far as, you know, if you, you know, care for a family member, or for you, you know, you have kids or whatnot, or pets, or you know, whatever. It's worth noting that kind of thing too, where you're like, yeah, I had to go to the vet, or I had to, yep. you know, there was an event at a thing, and that, you know, took away a chunk of this, yeah, of this time. So it took more days to get it done, but anyway, yeah, worth making note.
And here's where her journaling has helped me. She talks about the DeviantArt stock community. And talks about like the stock model photography category on DeviantArt. I did not know this was there.
Oh, wow. I didn't either.
And I knew, I mean, there's people like Brandon Dayton and Jake Parker who are collecting all these great Pinterest boards of reference of like dance and fabric folds and drapery. I post links to this stuff on the Lean Into Art Tumblr. So people can go there if you want to find out what I'm referring to. But now I'm going to have to add this too. I did not know there were all these... stock poses on DeviantArt as well. So that's cool. And she's journaling how long it took for her to collect the stock images. That's great. So then she shows how she started with like a stock pose, mapped a pose onto it, and then she takes it and starts noodling it into the figure that she wants to make, the character she wants to make. And shows how she used like different custom patterns, how she used the pattern stamp tool. And then she also, by journaling this, because this was done over the period of several days, mm-hmm. but because she recorded and journaled it, she has a report at the end of, oh, she used the ETP. That's right. She used the Emergent yeah. Task Planner. Good for you, Ashley. And she's at the end, she can report. Monday, she spent 2.5 hours on it. Tuesday, 2.5 hours. Wednesday, 3 hours. Grand total of 8 hours. So here's a new way of looking at this illustration. Did it take 3 days? Or did it take 8 hours, right?
Yes, big difference. And this is such a fantastic write-up. I mean, she even has the, like the screenshots of her Emergent Task Planner yep. pages, which that very interesting. I never thought to share any of mine whenever I've been really diligent about using it, which that ebbs and flows for me. It depends on what kind of things I'm taking on and whatnot, but that's super useful. What great resources all throughout this. And then, yeah.
That's a great way to put it, Rob. Okay. Yeah, what Dee and Ashley have done, they've contributed to the overall Lean Into Art community. They've created resources mm-hmm. for all the other leaners to use. So actually, thank you both to Dee and to Ashley for participating in the quest.
Thank you. This is awesome. Super obviously, awesome. I don't know if we had achievements, we'd be completely going boop, achievement unlocked.
Yeah, achievement unlocked. Yeah, I would be happy, more than happy, to send them buttons.
So, all right. That's awesome.
Yeah, good quest. Good quest wow. this time. Really happy with what I saw. So we will link to those in the show notes at leanintoart.com. I will also put them on the Tumblr and on the Google Plus page. Rob will post them on the Facebook page. Are we anyplace else? Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Twitter. Yeah, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Plus. Yeah, we're on the roughly common major social networks. Yeah. If you think we should be somewhere else, send us an invite. Whatever.
But once again, Ashley is at ashleynap.com. Ashleynap. Ashley, AKNAPP. And D is at djusan.com, which is djusan.com. So, Rob, I think this is a fun episode.
Yeah, thanks. I do too, Drizzy. Wow. I mean, it's all inspired based on your quest, which I did not complete. I'll share more when I do complete it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing we should say, is that if people didn't get the quest done in time for this episode, that shouldn't preclude them from participating in it. You can always participate in it, share it with us later. Just make sure you use the appropriate hashtag, LIAQuest7, for this particular one, and then we will record it. We'll see it on our Twitter feed, and we'll be happy to share it with the other leaners and maybe do a whole quests episode where we just respond to a whole bunch of different quests.
Exactly, yeah. Totally. That, I mean, it'd be a lot like following up to listener feedback and emails.
Yeah, yeah, but it'll be a lot more interesting. Rather than like playing a bunch of MP3s in the show where people are like, hey, Jersey and Rob, I love you guys and I love the show, which is interesting to us as the hosts, but nobody wants to listen to that. I'm much more interested in responding to people's contributions of art and their reflections and their journaling, people demonstrating these things that we're talking about and then showing them to one another in order to help one another, because that is what heroes do, is they try to help people. So you're going to have a quest next episode. So,
yes. So yeah, new quest coming up in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So cool. Well, got to wrap this guy up. So, thanks, everybody, for participating and downloading and listening. If you want to, you know, give a shout-out to the show, a great way to do it would be go to iTunes and give the show a star review. You don't even have to write a review, just a star review. Just give us however many stars you think we deserve. Giving the video a thumbs up on YouTube helps more people discover this thing because, you know, if you think it's good, you might want to let other people know that it's good. And that's a nice, clean, simple, and effective way. You can also go to Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr and all those places and, you know, write up a little thing. Say, hey, here's a link to the video. I like the show. It's pretty cool. That's also really useful. And then if you want to contribute to the show in any kind of monetary way, you can go to leanintoart.com/workshops. There's a whole bunch of really cool workshops you can download. All workshop purchases come with the 11-hour bonus pack of the Creative Topics Variety Pack, which features some of the lessons or games that I mentioned at the top of this episode. And then finally, we do an extra show in between the Lean Into Art cast called Extra Lean, which you can get by signing up for our newsletter at leanintoart.com. Go to the newsletter icon in the top right of the page. You can't miss it. It's a big red button with an envelope in it. And then you sign up for our newsletter, and then Rob sends out periodic newsletters with links to the extra leans that we record in between. Anything else that I missed, Rob?
No, that's it. Yeah, so we do record every week, and if you're interested in, you know, keeping a weekly flow of Jersey and Rob talking about this kind of stuff that we work on, extra lean is a good place to go.
All right. Well, cool. I guess we will see everybody next time. And until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on the Twitters.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.